Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cup. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that down. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wiggling.
Yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
Hey, what it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
I'm the queen of the cemetery. My spirit's already buried. You Osiris got him, his wife. Your bitch is done. Put that bitch on the walker. She's a serial stalker. Put that bitch on a leash. You'll never be me. Capish, I live my life in stability. Your home is special facility. I got the tool of the king. You won't survive in my ring. Put that bitch on a walker. She's a serial stalker. Put that bitch on a leash. You'll never be me. Capish, I live my life in stability. Your home. You won't survive in my ring. I pray, I rap, I shoot, I slay. I pray, I rap, I shoot, I slay. I pray, I rap, I shoot, I slay. I pray, I rap, I shoot, I slay.
You're trying to expose who? You can't even compose you. Bitch, go to hell.
We'll be right back.
and you are now tuned in at episode number 416. That's right, 416. Coming right back at you for a special exclusive episode of Off the Cuff Radio, sponsored by Buddy Boy Entertainment, Core Financial, Jesse Boutique, Da Vinci Clothing, Screwball. I'm your host, King Eric, alongside T-Max with the Facts, my co-host representing.
What it do, what it do. Monday Night Flight, OCC up in the building. Shout out to our co-host, this girl, man, Illinois, out of Sandman, Lake Chinchilla. I am the co-pilot, T-Max with the Facts, and our major pilot up front, King Eric, and we are here live and direct with another excellently exclusive interview, man.
Yes, sir, man. We still grinding, man. There's no days off because we stay pumping up that good content, giving people that felt they didn't have a voice, giving the underground shine, giving the legends their proper due. And with tonight's guest,
definitely, this
lady here, multi-talented, man. Rapper, philanthropist, filmmaker, fashion designer, actor, entrepreneur. I mean, she run more positions than Mike in her prime. You know what I'm saying? Like, shooting guard, point guard, center, however you want it, she gets it done. And
yeah,
without further ado, coming from Russia to the United States, let's all welcome Akasha Ra, y'all.
Jill.
Hey. Off the Cuff Radio, what's up? Thank you for having
love.
Me.
How's everything?
Everything's great. Everything's great. You know, just keep grinding, keep writing music. I love the introduction. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I had to get
so
my
much
prime
love.
Time over. That's right.
Yeah.
So much love. And it was my birthday weekend. So,
shoot.
You know, so good to love. Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
It was your birthday weekend. Hold on, we gotta have a round of applause
yeah.
first and foremost.
Yeah.
Hey.
That's how we do it around here.
Party never stops.
Definitely.
I see. Yeah, I'm on high fives, definitely. You know, celebrating, feeling good. And this intro made me feel even better, so thank you. Thank you for a warm welcome.
Absolutely.
Definitely,
absolutely.
Definitely, Miss Lady. Cock my shit dead law. So, if I pronounced it right in terms of saying how are you.
Yeah. I'm good. How are you guys?
And we're good. Yeah, man. So, I mean, so I guess, so like King said, you know, obviously you're a multi-talented, Wonder Woman of all types of skills, man. It's more than ill, you know, fulfilling those Eastern, you know, promises, you know, of making it pop, you know what I'm saying, of prosperity. So, I mean, tell us a little bit about yourself in terms of, you know, King obviously said you're from Russia, you know, tell us about what part you're from there and how you made it to the States over here.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm Akasha from South Russia, right?
Okay.
so I'm not from the South part, so it's not like it's not as cold as, you know, people think that it would be because, like, it's by the Black Sea, so it's more of like L.A. type of weather, or maybe Atlanta at the most.
Okay.
But, yeah, so I grew up there, then I lived in China for a few years, then on the East Coast, and now I'm in L.A., you know?
Oh.
And just keep grinding, you know, I do it all. I do my, but my spiritual work comes first. I'm a spiritualist and hypnotherapist, and everything else is just an outlet, you know? Like, I bring spirit everywhere I go, so, you know, my fashion designs, music, everything has that spiritual element to it, so that's just, I'm just doing my part, you know?
Definitely. And when you say South Russia, that's not St. Petersburg or Moscow, is it? So that's going further south from that, or is that right in that area?
Yeah, so Moscow is like a little up north, you know? So I'm from
the south side.
Yeah, like close to Turkey, close to like Armenia, you know? Caucasian Mountains, yeah.
Got you. Look, we look. Not only Yeah, I mean, look, we're getting a little bit of a geography lesson, too. So, I mean, obviously, you know, coming from there and then going to China, where were you? I mean, China, where were you at? Beijing, you know, Wuhan? I mean, where at?
Look at you. You know China very well, huh? I was in Beijing primarily, but when we were filming and I was modeling and acting, so we filmed a lot in Guangzhou, China, and, like, surrounding areas. And, like, I was in a TV show about Bruce Lee, so this is where he came from. So we were filming, like, where he was, you know, where he grew up and stuff. So we went to those little places for a while. And then also modeling, like, I spent a lot of time in Guangzhou and Shanghai. But I was mostly living in Beijing, yeah.
Man, so, I mean, so...
That's the beauty
wow.
of it is, you know, getting those experiences and you learning different cultures, and that plays a part of your diversity.
Yeah, it does. You know, like, I moved to China, I was like 16, 17, so just with my sister, my parents stayed in Russia. You know, so, like, we have to survive, like, and adjust. You know, you have to learn the language to order food. They didn't speak English, and... yeah, you have to, like, open your mind a little bit to understand where people come from. So just learning different culture, I think it's, like, it opens your mind a lot to, like, different perspectives, because sometimes we're so locked up in a box thinking that, you know, the world is a certain way just because we grew up a certain way, but that's not always true, you know. And that's, you know, learning different cultures and traveling, you find out, like, where the real human people values are, you know.
Yeah, and one thing about it is, in terms of getting that early, it really gives you a chance to see the world from a certain level. You know, I mean, you know, especially, I mean, with your, you know, of course, with your lineage, you know, Russia is, you know, I mean, from boxing, you know what I'm saying, with the Klitschko brothers to authorship, Fyodor Dostoevsky, you know, the author of Crime and Punishment.
Yeah.
So you have a very distinguished, you know, so I mean, you're all very distinguished in terms of whatever endeavor you get into. Growing up there, what was your introduction to hip hop, or when did you find yourself wanting, because I mean, obviously your interests are so diverse in so many different areas. I guess we just have to break it down from the beginning. I mean, where'd you, was it fashion, hip-hop, and then acting, or acting, fashion, and hip-hop? I mean, what order did it all come in?
Well, it was music, like, from the start, you know? And I went to, like, a classical music school, played piano, but I skipped a lot of classes because growing up wasn't easy, you know? So, you know, just that time wasn't really, like, a good time for anybody. It was, like, in the 90s. In post-Soviet Russia, where, like, the system collapsed completely.
Yeah,
where communism
fell.
Yeah, it was, like, a lot of... Yeah,
communism fell in the fall of 1991. Yeah, yeah.
You're so knowledgeable. Like, it's really refreshing. I appreciate you, like, learning about other... Yeah. Appreciate it. You know, it's always refreshing to talk to people that learn about other cultures because, you know, not everybody does. You know, people don't know. Anyway, so...
Yeah.
So, yeah, so growing up at that time, it was, like, complete chaos, a lot of corruption. You know, the educational system was really horrible at the time, like, and, you know, I went from, like, straight-eight student to, like, really troubled teenager, you know, I would skip classes, and it just wasn't a good time, you know, but I was always rhyming, and I was always, like, music was always a part of my life. And just, like, music school, like, the way that they train you, like, it was a lot of, like, she would hit my hands, like, literally, and cut my nails, like, really short. And I would be like, this is abuse, man. I don't like this. But, and just, like, learning, you know, and I think, like, that made me who I am today, because I didn't like these rules and how, you know, if you want to do music, like, in different cultures and countries, like, you have to, like, learn, you have to buy an instrument, you have to pay teachers and mentors. And hip-hop is just, you know, the voice of people. You don't really need much. You just, you know, you just rap, you know, and it just the way it originated, it was the voice of people, no censorship. No, nothing. You know, you can just truly express yourself. So that's why I really you know, my heart is there, you know. So, but it wasn't until, like, I went through all of these life experiences where I found my voice, and then it was like, okay, now, oh, it's a wrap, you know. I was writing, like, a lot of poetry, and that's when I actually came to the States, right? So mm-hmm. I wrote a lot of poetry, and then later on it just kind of became, you know, my songs. And, you know, I just write, and I just write. And my process is I just channel. It just comes through. I've always been like that, you know. The moment when I knew I had to start recording is when we were just, like, partying, you know, my friends and family, and they would ask me to sing my songs or rap my songs, and I just got tired of it, doing it live all the time. So I was like, okay, let me go to the studio and record this so that my people can hear it, you know.
So what was the rap song that made you be like, yeah, I fell in love with the culture. This is something I want to pursue.
What was the rap song? There's so many, you know. There's so many great artists. Like, J. Cole played a part. Like, I love his lyrics, and he's a lyricist, you know. Like, that for me is the key. I know a lot of hip-hop nowadays is a lot of ad-libs and just production, you know. But for me, it's all about lyrics, you know. Lil Wayne, too, like, the way he, you know, just twists the words, like, I like his style. But, I mean, there are so many people, Nicki Minaj, you know, a lot of people, Tupac, DMX. I mean, so many great artists. But, you know, about me, though, like, I don't really follow just one person or one culture. Like, I take a little bit from everything and take a little bit from everyone. You know, that's why my sound is, like, multidimensional, because I don't, like, all my songs are a little different. I just like being different, you know.
Yeah, that goes to show that you're a student of the game, and that plays a part of you knowing what song or what concept to tap into, and that's why it just flows just like that. When you're a student of this, it just comes at you.
Definitely. And when you look at it in terms of, you know, because one thing about it is that when you look at it from so many, you know, musicians in Russia, you know, such as, you know, Pyotr Tchaikovsky, you know, when you look at Vyacheslav Rostropovich, you know, Zenthira, you know, Rodion Chiperin, you know, Emil Gal, you know, there's always been a studious dedication and determination in terms of that musical articulation. You know, checking out some of your songs, you know, I mean, especially, you know, I was checking out the one you did, I believe it was called Chris, you know, about you needed somebody. Yeah. what was the inspiration behind that one?
Chris.
Okay.
Chris was the inspiration.
Okay, so this is based on
the story. I met this guy, his name was Chris. He broke my heart. I wrote another song, you know, just about that. But, you know, he broke my heart. But I wanted to keep it positive, and, you know, I was in love, you know. And I just wanted, no matter what you go through, like, I've been through a lot of hardships in life, you know. And I was in a very abusive relationship before that, like, back in New York, where I nearly, like, lost my life. But even that, you know, like, I still take the best out of the situation, you know. Like, he, you know, besides what happened, like, he gave me a book about hypnosis. Like, that's when I was like, okay, this is interesting, you know, subconscious mind and all of that. And when I moved to LA, when I left, that's what came into my life, like, hypnotherapy, and I started helping people. So, you know, every experience that you have in life, you still can take the best out of it, you know. This guy, he really broke my heart, man, but... You know, but then the song was still there, and I was like, I'll just keep the love and leave the rest for the next song. Just leave the rest for another song.
Hey, I was going to say this, too. Any rappers that's listening right now, you can jump on the remix. You know, you can get your 16 off, and, you know, throw some shots at them, too.
Okay.
Yeah, look, I'm sensing like Boondocks when Granddad was busting shots at Gangsta, Thugnificent.
Yeah. No subliminals either. We ain't doing subliminals there.
You said
gotta
what?
Call that man out.
Oh.
Well,
call that man out.
One thing.
What? Yeah.
Now, well, in terms of it, you know, because hip-hop is, like you said, you know, when you look at it, you know, coming, you know, when we touch on the history of it in terms of, you know, of course, the Soviet Union, you know, going back to the, you know, the Lenin, you know, Stalin, you know, Gorbachev days, you know, Bolshevik Revolution, all of that, you know, you're looking at it, you know, where there was pretty much an area where I can see why hip-hop, and especially fashion, you know, of course, what you do now and all your endeavors are so meaningful to you because, you know, definitely in a, you know, coming up, you know, during that time when it was communist, there's a lot of restriction in terms of expression as such, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of oppression.
My ancestors were sent to Siberia, like, just because they were doing what they were supposed to be doing, you know. And just because they were doing something, they were sent out to Siberia to die. Like, you know, like people weren't allowed to express themselves and just like do business or anything like that. So I think one of my relatives wrote a book about my lineage, you know, and how we, you know, people that came before me. So, and just growing up in that time, like there was a lot of oppression, a lot of, you know, like now people are asking me like how am I doing, like, during COVID times? And I have to explain, like, I'm not from the States. Like, I'm used to this lifestyle. Like, every day something is happening, you know. People come, take your business away or your money away, your freedom away, or you get, you know, you have to stay in place or whatever. Like, they just call shots. So, and a lot of artists are not able to express themselves. Like, there's censorship. You know, same with China. A lot of artists got missing for speaking up or for saying certain things that are kind of like related to political, you know, issues. And that's something that I didn't get growing up. Plus all the abuse that I experienced, you know, when you're in abusive dynamics, you're like, you don't have a voice. So later on in life, when I found my voice and I started working with people, helping people, you know, to free their mind, because our environment and our belief systems are so stuck in our subconscious mind. So we don't really write our story, you know. So I help people rewrite their own story, take control of their mind, right? That's what hypnotherapy is. And after doing that for so long and kind of like helping people heal and hearing other people's stories, you know, I really found my voice. And I was like, now that I found my voice, I'm going to speak for everyone who still hasn't found theirs. And that's where, you know, my song Black Power, you know, Akasha is here. Like all of these things that I talk about is... it's not just me. It's everyone that I connect to, you know, people that I know, the stories that I know. It's not just me that I was growing up like that. Like my parents went through a lot of hardship. You know, you watch the movies like Mafia and everything, but that was like real life. You know, they try to kidnap me and my sister. You know, we have Mafia threats all the time, you know, just growing up. So like, yeah, a lot of oppression.
I also see it too is that pressure and pain can create the best art. And I remember when I first heard one of your songs, I did the one that we just played. I was like, I could tell she got a story because I could tell you put heart into your music. I wasn't even expecting you to go hard like that. I was like, man, you know this is gonna be an interesting show.
Yeah. Wait till you hear my new music. Like, I took it even further, man. I took it even further. Like, yeah. I have new songs coming out soon and an album release, too. So,
oh, wow.
But, yeah, R.I.P. Stalker was, it was just life. You know, every song that I write, like, Love to Death, like, R.I.P. Stalker, like, I went through a real situation. You know, and it was a woman, and I never met her. She just, like, started harassing me, my business, threatening my family. Like, she's, like, found out my address. She's, like, I'm going to kill you, destroy you. I was, like, what? She's, like, I have your naked photos. I'm going to expose you. I'm, like, dude, bitch, send me a check. Like, what are you talking about? If you expose me, And my naked photos, like, at least monetize on that because my body is hot. Like, what are you talking about? So, and then she sent me.
She sent me pictures
of her ass. I was like, excuse me, miss. And she said, you'll never be me. I was like, nobody wants to be you. You're a little ugly inside and out. Like, you know, like, leave me alone. So everything that I said in the song, it was a comeback song. So, you know, I got a restraining order. I wanted to kill the bitch, but sorry. I don't know if it's censorship radio, but I just.
No, this is
like
not
I
censorship.
Said,
this is off the cuff. Do whatever you like.
Like I said, you know, being oppressed and not having a voice for so long, like I just say whatever the fuck I want to say, you know. I don't hold back.
Yeah.
So
right,
you know, I have to do the right thing. Yeah, there you go. Because I shoot and I slay. I pray, I rap, I shoot, I slay. Bitches. Anyway, so.
We all play around.
Let that AK off.
With my Kalashnikov. Yeah, right. With my Kalashnikov and a bottle of vodka. Don't fuck with, do not fuck with the Russians. So she was like attacking me, you know? And I was like, okay, she's still like looking at my shit. So I'm going to go get a restraining order because, you know, just being a martial artist and like, no, like I know, like I had to fight for my life before. I'm a fighter and it's like a street fighter. Like I fought with men mostly like back in the day, like, but that's just the way that I grew up. Like that's, it was that lifestyle, you know? So I never liked people to come at other people. So I would always defend people or, you know, my women. And it's just, it is what it is. So when this woman came at me, I'm like, nah, if we're fighting, I'm winning. And we're in the States. Like, I'm not going to jail for this. And I don't take life. Like, I create life. Like, I'm a creative person. I'm like, this is so not worth it. But if she comes at me, you know, I have the skill. I'm like, I need to chill, you know. So the hardest part was, like, to really contain that rage and anger and really, like, that's mastery. That's when you master yourself because, trust me, she got on my nerves so bad, and I was like, I just need to, like, channel it somewhere else because it has to go somewhere. Because hurt people, you know? And when you get hurt, you either pass it on to other people or that self-master, you have to release it in a way that doesn't affect anyone else in your life, your relationships, your family, you know, because you get bitter. People hurt you, you get bitter. So I was like, okay, let me channel it in a way that not only helps me, you know, channel my rage, but also, like, empowers other people to stand up for themselves, which I found out later. But at first, it was just, like, I got to go in the studio to get back at this bitch. And then, you know, I got the first studio available. I never worked with this guy before. And then he asked me, like, what you going to do? Are you going to rap? I was like, yeah, but, it like, don't worry about it. I'm not just another white girl rapping. Like, I'm just trying to, like, get back at her, like, and say everything that I want to say, you know? He was like, really? What? But tell me about it. So I told him the story. He's like, okay, I want to hear it now. And then we record it, you know, and I just released it. Anyways, this is the story.
No, it's all good. Because one thing about people got to understand because, see, I never brag on anything I know. It's just being a lifetime student. I know how y'all get down over there. Russians are with the shit.
They get busy.
They are with the shit.
Man.
I mean, for those out there that really don't understand, you know, and this is just history because when you really have to understand Russian politics over in Eastern Europe and everything that happened after communism fell, and when you had guys like Ivankov, Maglevich, you know, Aragon, she knows it. Yeah, she's got that type of that you don't want to fuck with her type going on, you know.
Because
those names I mentioned are like some of the illest crime bosses over there, and you know, like I said, the Russians are fighters. You know, when we take it back to Drago and Rocky, you know, when we look at, Khabib, you know, and mixed martial arts, I mean, yeah, you know, like, they, yeah, it's not, that's a problem y'all don't want. you know, so, I mean, in terms of that, you know, so, I mean, so the martial arts, how did you find your way into that, and what was your discipline? Taekwondo, Aikido, Jiu-Jitsu, Karate, you know, what is your...
Oh, man. So growing up, I really wanted to fight, and my dad wasn't really into it, because, like, she's a girl, she's not going to be fighting, but... You know, I was fighting anyways. And street fighting, you have to know how to fight, you know. Like, anyways, so I took, like, a karate class, you know, a little bit. But then when I moved to China, I got this role. And it was divine. Like, I just manifested. I didn't even audition, and they just called me. It was just, like, divine situation, you know, because I was meant to be a part of that movie. Or TV series, whatever. I didn't even know what project that was. I just, you know, I took a flight down to Guangzhou, which they speak different language. They don't speak Mandarin. They speak, like, Cantonese, right? So I had to take, like, a bus to, like, this village where it's, like, in the, you know, in the shithole in Russia. Oh, in Russia, in China, I'm sorry. So I just took that bus, and I just got there. They gave me the script in Chinese and English, which... None of them are my first languages, and said 5 a.m. call time, you know, see you there. I show up, and that's when I find out that it's like it's TV series about Bruce Lee. So a lot of martial artists were on set, and, you know, just we're filming for like 2-3 months, and I was traveling with them. There's nothing else to do, like no Wi-Fi, no movies, nothing. And, you know, we're just playing. And I was just like, I really want to learn more about, you know, Kung Fu. So, and just learning about Bruce Lee and how he took every, people think that he was cocky because he was fighting everybody. But when he was fighting, he was, you know, people would beat him up, and then he would learn the technique by experiencing it. And then the next time he would, you know, go at them, he would use the same technique. So that's how he, like, collected a little bit from everything, from like dancing, boxing, and created his own, like, martial arts style, right?
Jeet Kune Do, Way of the Fist.
Exactly. So, and then, you know, when I moved to New York, I really started, like, training hardcore. Like, I would wake up at 5 a.m. in the morning, take a train, and just train for, like, 3 hours, you know, in the city, like, almost every day, I think. And that's when I was in that abusive relationship. But it wasn't really for that. It was for me. You know, and then after I left, you know, I still continued on. Like, it's really something that I knew in my soul, like, this, it was natural. So, and when I started training here in LA, like, it was so natural to me. Like, I like to fight and I like to spar, you know, that, you know, even my master, he was like, you're so natural. Like, you're so natural. And women are actually better fighters because we have, you know, hips and that stance, and we're like, we have that survival instinct, you know, that mother instinct. So, but it's just the spirituality behind it. You know, Kung Fu wasn't really a martial art. It was a spiritual practice, and Shaolin temples where they, like, practiced enlightenment, and martial art part of it is just, you know, an extension of that. But Kung Fu means working on yourself. And that's what, you know, I resonate with. Like, I'm always constantly working on me. I'm expanding in different areas. I don't limit myself. You know, I challenge myself. Everything that I experience, I kind of try to, you know, I don't compete with anybody, just myself, because that's the only competition that you have. So everything that I do, it's kind of, it still has martial art aspect in it, because it's not a fighting technique. It's a lifestyle, you know?
Yeah. And when you look at it from the definition, yeah, like King says, levels, when you look at martial, because martial by definition means warlike, but in terms of being able to fight a war, you have to have the discipline and knowledge, you know, going into battle without a strategy is senseless. Going into battle with a sound strategy and the means to facilitate victory is priceless, you know.
And the physical part is just a part. Like, there's the spiritual wars that we're fighting, you know, the mental part, that is the most difficult, because you can see it. And as a hypnotherapist too, like, working with the mind, you can see, like, athletes that are going to win, they have a certain mindset, you know?
Yeah.
You
got to
have
that mindset. They're in great physical shape. Yeah, they're in great athletic shape, but the mind ain't there. The mind ain't there. They're, If your head is not into the game, it's a done deal.
And you can tell, like, people win those that have the strongest will to survive and the strongest will, you know. So if you have the will, it doesn't matter. You're just going to get it, you know. But when you give up, that's when you lose it, no matter what your physical situation is, you know.
Yeah, you know, like you said, mentally, that's basically majority of the battle. You know, we look at, you know, because, you know, King and myself are big boxing buffs, and we grew up in the era watching Mike Tyson.
Hey.
And, you know, Tyson, you know,
one of a kind. Yeah.
Yeah, and you saw a lot of his stuff, you know. Obviously, I know you saw a lot of his videos and stuff, and one of his most famous quotes was, "Everybody's got a plan until they got hit." But, you know, Tyson...
Man, people talk shit about Mike Tyson all the time, but he was one of the greatest. Like, I have so much respect for him. And just, he was, like, staying celibate and, like, focused and whatever. Like, all the haters can go fuck themselves, man. You gotta sacrifice and get there. Like, people don't respect the work, you know? They just see all the stupid shit and they just talk shit. But, like, he's one of the greatest, man.
You know, one thing about Tyson, you can tell that from his intimidation to the way he walked to the ring, to how he shook up the opponent look, you could tell somebody was going to die that day.
That's what I'm talking about, that mindset, you know? Like, it's in the spirit, that fighting spirit. Because, like, if you don't have it, you know, you're going to get your ass beat, like, in defeat.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing about it with Mike, you know, when we look at, you know, everything that happened, you know, it's a tragedy. Things happen because, of course, after Cuss passed away, you know, Mike, you know, there were people in the circle that didn't have his best interest and he lost his focus. But when you look at it in terms of pure academia, in terms of the pugilistic science and philosophy of the ring, Mike was an unbelievably gifted fighter in terms of what he could do. The thing, and everybody just saw Mike knock fools out. I'm like, we saw this for like what, five, seven years.
He was putting fools on the mat. He was like 20 years old, cleaned up dudes twice his size. That was a phenomenon within itself.
And we were like, when I look back at his fights, I'm like, we didn't even see everything that he actually could do. We just saw the power. We never really even saw him actually go into the actual boxing. You know, so it's like, wow, what could we have seen, you know, had things not got derailed for him? You know, Rob, what you said is so real because I remember you seen Bloodsport, right, with Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Mm-hmm.
And you saw that part where he thought, chopped off dude's hat with the katana sword, and he was like, you didn't flinch. You have fighting spirit. And that's innate in terms of it, you know, because sometimes with people, it's not necessarily fear of fighting, it's the fear of what may happen in a fight. Because if you got to think, you know, and growing up, going through things that I did, I was a little bit of nervous. I'm not that now. And especially being older, you have to be careful, though, in situations. But my thing is, if it's a situation, even being older, it's like, if we got to throw down, we just got to throw down. But but you have to understand, too, you know, but you don't let anyone feel like that they can punk you, you know. Because some people, I'm like, and then when you see the real quiet people, it is true. I tell people, those motherfuckers you see in the back that are quiet and to themselves, you know, those are the people that usually are trying to just live their life, and you shouldn't bother them.
Yeah, the real ferocious one.
Man, look, true story, because I used to teach. So we had this kid named Sam, and Sam was one of the kids that came over from New Orleans after, you know, Katrina hit. So Sam was stocky. He was a fifth grader. He was stocky. You know, a real quiet dude. You know, and this one boy in class kept messing with him. And one day the dam burst, and Sam beat his ass in front of everybody.
Yeah.
Look, students and us were like, we were looking at the students were looking at us, we were like, don't fuck with Sam. We were Sam made his mark. It's just like, you know, but that's what it was, you know, and I mean, but Sam didn't bother nobody, you know, but he was from New Orleans, too. He was from the hood, so it's like, you don't know what that dude was internalized in terms of things he saw and everything before he got to where we were in Virginia.
Exactly.
So,
that PTSD kicks in. PTSD kicks in, survival instincts kick in. That's it. You know, people that have been through the worst, like, they have the most power. You know? Because it's not new for you. Yeah. And, you know, that's how I was. I was just chill. I was, like, making my music, doing my spiritual work. But people come at me, and sometimes you got to tell people off. Like, you know, all that turn the other cheek kind of got me in trouble a lot, because I have a big heart. I love to death. Like, I have a big heart and, like, helping people and everything. But some people really have no soul, you know. Their spirit is not in the right place. And I got tired of it. So it wasn't just a stalker situation. It was everything that I've been through. I'm like, I'm tired of people talking shit about my spirituality. I'm tired of people, you know, I help people. Like, people called me a witch. Or and she came at me like she was attacking my spiritual work. That's when it got to me, like, my spiritual work
personal.
Is everything. You know, you can talk shit about my ass, like my body, whatever. I don't care. My age. You know, but, like, when you come at my spiritual work, like, my ancestors don't like that shit. Like, okay?
We got to throw down.
Nah, you don't fuck with my spirit, you know? And that's why I said my spirit's already buried you, bitch. Like, don't come at me. Because she came at me with, like, karma wouldn't be... She said karma wouldn't be easy. She didn't even talk to me, nothing. She looked at my pictures, thought that I was, like, this little Barbie girl. I'm like... You should have done your research, because, like, when I throw my nunchucks and swords, you know, you will remember my words, bitch. Like, don't fuck with me. So, and what we learned in Kung Fu, three strikes, right? The first time, sometimes people not intentionally, you know, push you or, like, you know, like, it's not their intention. So the first time they come at you, you see, like, do they really intend to, like, take your life or hurt you, or are they just, like, bullshitting? Because... the best fight is avoid any fight, right? So I blocked her. I was like, the first time, I just blocked her. I'm like, I'm not even going to engage. You know, I just blocked this person. But she kept stalking me. She found out my business address, my shop. I own the shop. So she started calling my employees. I was like, okay, second time, you see their technique. Like, what are they doing? What are they really doing? The third time, you have all the right to defend yourself. You don't even think. You just go for it, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was it. I'm like, okay. Like, this has to stop. Not only you harassing me, you did that to other women, a woman coming at woman, like, somebody has to come in and stop this shit. Like, I got a restraining order. I'm like, listen, you got to stop this. Like, where it's going, get help. You know, don't hurt another soul. And I'm a strong spirit, and I still was affected by it. I'm like, you don't attack my spiritual work. You don't come at me based on your insecurities. Like, leave me alone. And also, everybody else who tries me, don't fuck with me. You know, I'm doing something important. I'm doing my spiritual work. Let me be, you know, and a lot of celebrities, a lot of artists go through that. They just don't talk about it. Like Lizzo the other day, she broke down. She's like, why are you hating? Like, people just hate on people that are doing something. This is not okay. Like, you got to understand, like, social media, it's cool, but these are real people behind the pictures. You can't just, you know, talk shit about the bodies. And Lizzo is very amazing and successful, and she empowers women. You know, if you don't like her, keep scrolling down. Don't do this stupid shit. Like, it's because people's insecurities, they take it out on other people. Like, this stuff is within you. You got to look in the mirror, you know, because whatever you hate in other people is within your soul that's killing you. Anyway, I just get all worked up. Like, my fighting spirit is
okay.
Like...
It's okay. No, it's okay.
It's all good. It's all good. It's okay. You know, and build it on that topic, Jadakiss said it best, social media gave cowards an outlet. Because a lot of this stuff, a lot of people say, you know, they wouldn't say directly to you. The internet, they gave a lot of people a great comfort zone.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they kind of lost their senses. Yeah, like you come at me on social media, but in real life, you wouldn't even say it to my face. You would be scared. Like, you know.
I'm like, look.
Yeah, it's like I told T-Mac, it's like soon them cats get that Wi-Fi, that 5G up, man, they go crazy.
Look, y'all gotta understand about Ra here, y'all. She's part of that GGH clique. Girl got hands. So the thing is about it too, everything that you obviously, because, you know, people will try things, because everybody has a different trajectory of tolerance. And that's something some people try to take advantage of. Like you said, Ra, you know, the best fight is no fight, because especially in the hood, you know, King and myself, we've seen a lot, you know, been involved in some things, and we've seen shit when it goes bad. You know, and that's why, you know, especially out here in the States, you know, in the hoods where gunplay is really, you know, I'm 43 years old. You know, so I was growing up around that time when, you know, we really started seeing, like, when I was coming up, you know, you throw your hands and either you still hate the motherfucker afterwards or y'all friends after that. But, you know, and guns did not come out back in the day unless it was some real serious shit. You know, that was like, if you got a tool, that was because there was really something going on that you knew it was potential you have to lay somebody down. And that was like an 11 on the 1 to 10 scale. Now it's like with these situations, you know, like King said, you know, everybody wants to get out there online and then talk. But then also by the same token, you know, like you said, with celebrities, like you were saying about what they deal with, the hardest thing about it at times on social media is because your life can be public. And the hardest thing about maintaining a reputation from who you are, especially if you're a rapper, is understanding that at times you're going to have those. Can you imagine the type of shit rappers got to deal with? I mean, in terms of just trying to avoid shit, not because they're pussy, but because of the fact that, you know, because a lot of these dudes who will test them, usually they're just trying to get a pay. They're just trying to get a payout. You know, their thing is,
plus they
manage somebody.
You know, they managers now, they tell the artists, don't even look at the comments on your Instagram. Just go
right
out there and just do your thing, because that
right
comments will get to you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because that shit is not cool. That's why a lot of people kill themselves or grow like the drug route, right? Like they just overdose. It's like, you know, that energy, because you got to understand like how energy works too. Like it's not just physical fight. Like when people throw shade at you, they literally throw shade at you. Like they throw that negativity out, you know, at the person. So if you don't have a strong spirit, it can kill you, like literally, you know, because all that hate, like you can feel it. You can feel it, you know? So people try you all the time. That's why I was like, okay, a lot of these rappers are successful. They don't have time to address this type of issue because they don't want to feed that, you know, they don't want to give energy to these people, right? Because they have so many resources and so many things to take care of. They're like, okay, I don't want to put them in the spot just to highlight their bullshit, you know? But I'm still coming up and I'm like, and just who I am as a person, I'm like, I see it all the time, and also, like, when I put out the RIP stalker, I started getting, like, messages from people, you know, people that I know that said, like, hey, I'm going through the same thing. What do I do? I'm like, chill, get a restraining order, you know, it's not worth it, you know, like, and just leading people through healing, because that stalking shit is, it can really mess with your head, because, like, every time you go to work, every time you pick up the phone, you're like, oh, even if you're not scared of the person, like, that just negative, constant negativity, you know, when people call you names and, you know, just constant negativity. Like, this crazy girl was calling me, like, you know, like, crazy, calling me names, threatening me. It's like, it's annoying. After a while, you'd be like, okay, like, st- stopped, you know. So I have to speak about this thing. Like, it's not okay, you know. Look at yourself. Stop trying to dim other people's light or spotlight just because you have nothing going on. Like, look at yourself. Look at yourself. Stop trolling.
And that's where we see a lot of that jealousy come in,
deep emotion, boy.
It is, and when that green-eyed monster, you know, gets in people's eyes, you know, it causes gangrene of all types of pain because when you look at situations, a lot of, you know, we look at certain, you know, situations in the music where some of the beefs are comical, i.e. Kanye and Drake right now, which is more comical than serious. But then we look at, you know, real situations. You know, I'm not going to say Biggie and Tupac because that's always the go-to, you know, but when you look at situations that were going on, you know, I'm glad that they
look
got
at
it.
But you gotta also look at it like, yeah, that was already stuff brewing already before music. It was just getting more of an outlet. Pretty much just go out there and wild out even more. And even what we talked about with social media, the attention, the clout, and all that stuff, it fed the ego, which is a bigger monster. That ego is a monster, like just like jealousy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's important to basically know it because especially as an artist, we've been blessed to do so many shows. We talk with so many people on the air and off the air about situations, and one thing we always say is that when you're in a different place of being a celebrity, being an artist, being known, and keeping it real, having money, you have to move different. You know, shout out to Lil Yachty. We interviewed him last night at UNLV, and he was just saying, you know, once you got a certain situation, you have to move different because when you got people out there who are envious of your position, bad things can happen because when they look at you, when you're looking like what you said, Ron, it's so true about jealousy and envy and shade. Those are transference. That's what we call in psychology transference. They try to push everything off on you because of the fact of what they don't have and what they can never be.
They're projecting
people,
out their own shit.
Yeah. And there is life and death in the tongue. And that's why, you know, and literally there is such a thing as in terms of being alive with certain souls. And when you know somebody's soul is not the most, let's just say, because, I mean, we all have faults, but there's people that go through things and are still keep a positive vibe, and then there's some, and it's like being drug into more wrath or malevolence, and you're going to be drowned in it. And when you see these people who are not positive, who always complaining, who never give things, those are the people you stay away from.
Yeah, and those are energy vampires. They suck your energy out. Like, you feel drained after being around them. That's why I keep my circle really tight. energy is real, you know. People don't believe in that, but that's why I like hypnotherapy because it's, you know, I'm a clinical hypnotherapist. It's metaphysics and science so that you learn, like, neuro-linguistic programming and just how the brain works, but you also, like, have it backed up. So metaphysics that are kind of blended with science, you know, and energy is real. So you got to protect your energy.
So you know we gotta talk about it.
Just follow the other vice. Just let them starve.
Yeah.
Or just let them starve and cut their phone off. That's what you do.
Yeah. Exactly.
Uh huh.
Yeah. So you know we gotta get into about your modeling because you know you're also an accomplished model. I mean you've done all these things. So how did that come in terms of the modeling? What type of modeling did you do? And how does one get into that?
Well, I you know, I always loved like modeling and just runway and fashion. So for me, just fashion and like how do you express yourself and photography and all of that. It was really always a passion. So, and it wasn't really about looks. It was just the expression, you know. I love fashion. So I worked as a model in China. I did runway shows, you know, print, all of that. But there, you know, back in the day, Kim Kardashian wasn't so popular. So I always had booty. And they wanted me to, like, really starve, especially in Asia. They didn't like that before. I don't know about now, but, like, they really didn't like any kind of booty, you know. So, and
it's
no
okay,
matter
we
how
do.
Much.
We love it.
I know. So no matter how much, like, weight I would lose, like, it was always a struggle. So I was, like, pretty much starving myself. And I didn't like that. Like, I didn't like that in a lot of supermodels that I worked with that are so beautiful and gorgeous. Their mental health wasn't there. Like, and
yeah, we're
going to
talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Most beautiful women in the world and, like, so insecure and so much in pain and trying to struggle and you know, take drugs, whatever, just to keep that body shape that
yeah,
that
bulimia
body shape
and
was
all
created
that.
by men. Like, you're not like a woman supposed to be a woman with curves. Like, we're not like little boys, and you know, and just the
right.
fact that like they put like 13 years old, like 15 years old on a cover, sexy and everything, and that's, you know, when you're like hit a certain age, you can't be a model. It's like, it's wrong. And being molested as a child myself, I'm like, this is not okay, like how this fashion world is happening, you know? So I wanted to create my own fashion line that stands for something, not just for, you know, nowadays you can see like Rihanna's doing her thing, like people like plus size models are okay now, like, which is
yeah.
it's great to
Shout
see,
to Lyra Scrawl,
you know?
Was it Abigail Rashford, Lyra Scrawl? You know, all of them, you know, the plus size. Who
yeah,
are,
they have to catch
yeah.
up with the movement, you know, like, and where are we going? So it's amazing to see, but I wanted to take it even further. I was like, I want a fashion line that stands for something. So my fashion line, hashtag no basics, I have like different collections, like hashtag no war, hashtag no racism, hashtag no violence. So all of these different collections have like that message and that artwork to it. So when you're wearing it, it's not just you just, you know, wearing a cool shoe or a cool like outfit. You stand for something, you know. So that's what I wanted to create. And fashion for me is very influential. People are so influenced by fashion, you know, like it's such an important part of our lives, like how we express ourselves, like the social standards, everything, the respect that we get, like, you know, you see somebody's like really wearing something nice, you kind of like look at them differently, right? Even though I didn't want to, like, as a deep spiritual person, I was never like that. Like, I don't judge book by its cover. But what I learned even like in hypnotherapy school, like, always dress for success, because like if you go to a hospital and the doctor is wearing like flip-flops, you're not going to look at them, you know, the same way as if they're wearing their uniform or a cop or anybody, right? You kind of be like, I'm kind of doubting your skill. Even it's subconscious, so it's not even the conscious thing. So clothing plays an important part, and fashion plays an important part in our lives, whether we admit it or not, whether we see it or not, it's always there. Whether people follow fashion or not, you know, you still have to dress somehow.
Yeah. And I think from fashion, that's one of the most, that's something that is very, very, very important, because it is a personal expression of style as such. One thing about the modeling industry, we've heard the stories, a lot of situations about what goes on, everything from the hypersexualization of young girls, because a lot of them do get started at a young age, to, you know, these artificial standards of beauty. Because, look, me as a man and a 1,000%, you know, hetero straight man, I believe women should have tits and ass. That is just me, you know.
Yeah.
I believe a woman should have a shape, you know, and that's just something that for me, because when you look at magazines like Cosmo and all that, I don't think, you know, everybody has their publications, and I'm not going to shame them. I just don't think that those
standards that they try to set for beauty are realistic or actual. I think it's just like the music game right now. You have people trying to say what hip-hop should sound like who really, really have no idea about the culture. And I'm like, when you're trying and when you're trying to put these limitations on women, you're basically telling these women that there's no diversification. You're not letting them embrace their natural beauty, because no matter what color she is, no matter where she's from, whether she's black, white, Asian, whether she's Russian, Iranian, African, Brazilian, Colombian, Uruguayan, Panamanian, exactly. There's beauty everywhere. And I'm like, let these women be great in their gorgeousness. Let them express themselves.
And back in the day, like, when you choose a wife, like, in my culture, when people were choosing a wife, they would look at hips, like, because, you know, wider hips, it's, you know, you're going to have a healthier baby because, like, it's easier to give birth.
Childbearing.
And then, like, my whole life, I had to, and wanting to model, I had to always struggle with my natural body, and it took me a long time to really, like, accept my curves, you know. And now people are like, oh my god, your booty, you know, and like your legs and everything. But you know, back in the day, I really struggled with just accepting my body, you know, because of those standards. So I can see, and I know from my own experience how, you know, I was just starving myself, I wasn't eating right, which affected my mental health too, because a lot of times when you don't eat, like, people think that losing weight, it's not eating, but your metabolism slows down, you know. You have to stay active. You have to work out. And me being, like, I have muscles, like, just being, like, fit, you know. I'm not, like, big or anything, but I've always been strong. So, and that's what they didn't like in the modeling industry either back in the day. They're like, nah, this is, like, you're too masculine, or, like, which is not even true, you know. I feel like it's the most feminine thing when a woman has, like, strong legs. It's amazing to look at, you know?
Yeah.
Not just butt, like, not just that fake BBL butt, but strong legs. Like, my trainer says, is like, there's so many parts and so many muscles, like, you know, like hamstrings, like, all of it has to align. Otherwise, it's just, like, a little, I don't know about you guys, you probably like that anyway, but, you know. But
no
the bodybuilding and being fit, like, there's so much that goes into it.
Yeah,
I was gonna say, for radio purposes, I plead the fifth.
Yeah. Well, what Ra was talking about, what she said to BBL, y'all, she was talking about those Brazilian butt lifts and everything, and especially, you know, I'm going to go there to a degree, especially in the black community. King and myself, we come from that era of where we wanted our women to just naturally, you know, because, I mean, when I look at some of these old, even with the quote-unquote video victims back in the day, these girls were natural. I mean, just looking at the regular videos, I mean, you could look at, and it's like, if I could... You know, if you look at Dr. Dre's Nothing But a G Thing video, or if you looked at, you know, Curious's Uptown Shit, you know, or if you even looked at, you know, Lords of the Underground, you know what I'm saying, Chief Rocker with the old girl shimmying with it, or, I mean, I'm trying to think what other, Akinyele's a Bomb, because they had some cuties up in there all rugged out. I mean, it was like, but this is the era we grew up in where it's like there was no emphasis on trying to really have plastic, you know. It was like, you know, and now, you know, we've seen social media come in, these influencers, and now they're trying to tell women how they need to look. I mean, you know how it is.
And a lot of
people
are killing themselves in the process. You got women with rotten butts out there. Rotten butts.
Man, like, it's still not worth it, you know. Like, and don't take me wrong, like, I'm still for... Like, if you come in from a healthy place and you really want to, like, change your body, go for it. You know what I mean?
Right.
But don't do it for anybody else because you think you have to, or for a man or for anybody. Do it for yourself, you know? And you can tell the difference between jiggling and bouncing. You know? It's like,
for stiffness.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just embrace your body the way that it is. Like, if you really think that you want to add something, do it from a healthy place. Don't do it because you want to please people or create a certain image, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's important.
But yeah, and it's always important, I think, for people to be into themselves, I think, in terms of understanding what it is. Sometimes situations come where people are going to say things, and I'm like, you know, but you also have to be, I think, careful in terms of understanding where you're shooting at certain levels too, as well, because that, you know, there's nothing wrong being confident in what you do. I think you also have to know, though, you can put things out there, but there's going to be criticism. You know, but I never want to.
It's always going to be there, though.
Right, right.
It's
and I never want to
be there.
Self-expression. Right. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's always going to be there.
Right.
If you write a book, I like the book 48 Laws of Power. He talks about
Robert Greene. Make enemies,
don't make friends. Because if you don't have any enemies, you're not standing for nothing. You're not doing anything. So once you start doing something, but just understanding that, like, still being humble and understanding what your goal is and what your narrative is, and not let other people distract you from what your goal is. You know, with that confidence and that ego and everything else. You know, like, that's the key, because people will still talk shit. Like, they always find something to talk about. Like, people always talk about me. Like, I got used to it, you know. It's just, like, is it distracting you from going where you are? Or, you know, it's like, that's the point. But in art, you know, when I put out Black Power, the first thing that I say, black people are the gods. You ought to be them. A friend of mine, and she meant well. She was like, are you sure you want to put this out there? Like, you know, a lot of people would, you know, would question that. And I'm like, I don't give a shit. Like, this is how I feel. This is my spirit. This is my soul. Like, I don't care if people talk, you know, like, the artist can say things that other people want. And I think that's the true artist. Some artists can say things and express themselves that most people won't say it. Same with acting, like putting out those emotions, putting out those raw things that come from the soul. Like, we're messengers, you know what I mean? So however that comes out, you will always have opposition when you're doing something, especially when you're doing something great, you know? And by great, I don't mean the ego part. I mean, are you serving your purpose? There always will be opposition.
That's real what you said, because a lot of times in terms of expression, because when you wrote that song, Black Power, I think, you know, you wrote that from a level of the historical significance and from your personal feeling.
I wrote that long time ago. Yeah. I wrote that long time ago. It was, you know, just life. You know, and I always admired and loved black people, you know, women, men, you know, I date black men, but I love, like, I have friends that are, you know, always had, like, Caribbean, different lineages, you know, and we all came from, if you really research and you really open your mind, we all came from a black primordial mother. Like, we all have ancestry, and that's where it comes from. It's like, why are you changing history? Like, why are you putting these beliefs, you know, onto people that weren't there to begin with? Those beliefs were created later on in life, you know, and, you know, just growing up in Russia and in China and in the States, like, I thought when I would come to the States, like, this was, like, the most diverse country, you know, coming from, like, oppressed communism, blah, blah, blah. And then I saw the racism, and my boyfriend at the time, he was African, and, you know, even him, like, even within his own community, he had, like, racism is everywhere, you know? And it's, like, because he was African, people are like, oh, you know, you have flies around you, and you all, like, live, like, poor, even though, like, Senegal is, like, one of the richest countries. Like, they have, you know, but people don't know. So ignorance is not a bliss. It's ignorance. So
shout out to Akon representing Senegal. Yeah, and you're right.
Because, I know, right?
You know, one thing about it, Rob, because this is a great discussion we're having, and you know, we got a little time, so we're gonna build on this more with that. The thing about it is, when you look at, you know, I mean, we have, because King knows one thing about me. You know, my brother knows this much. I can't stand the hoteps, because there's a difference between what is real in terms of what we know to be documented truth in terms of African civilization, because we know that in terms of medicine, mathematics, in terms of Egypt, the pyramid, we had all of that thousands of years before. People forget that Egypt is in Africa. People forget that the Suez Canal was man-made. That's why a lot of people really don't understand that all of that, like the Middle East, everything, that's all in Africa. Africa is not a country. It's a continent with 55 countries on it, you know.
Exactly.
And all of this was, you know, there's a difference between people that run down the road with crazy narratives and conspiracies, and then there's real facts. And the facts are, we had all of this beforehand in terms of even going back to the General Hannibal, who was African, you know, who had African descent. You know, we had all of this. We had kings and queens. We had, you know, riches over there. That's why when, you know, colonizers came, you know, they saw, I mean, you look at the situation happened with Leopold down in the Congo and all the people he slaughtered down there, you know. You know, so
when it comes to religion, too. When it comes to religion, you know, because Christianity wasn't a religion until it was. And a lot of slaves, like in Cuba, like Santeria, they had to blend with Catholicism, their spirits, like the Yoruba, the original African spirits, spiritual work, just to blend in so that they can practice it safely. But freedom of religion, I mean, come on. That's not something that was here. Maybe it is right now, they say, but... You know, and I don't have anything against religious people or religions. I just feel like the spirituality should come from you. And even if you don't believe,
right,
like historical facts and or whatever, like meditate and ask your over soul that your soul has all the answers. You can just tap into your DNA and find those answers. Meditate, you know what I mean? Like, you know the truth. You know what's true and what's not. And it's like, yeah, all of those things and that power was there. And then it shifted. So we have to talk about it. There's no way around it,
you know? I think it's also a case of people, they don't really want to talk about it because, for one, they really don't understand it. When you know you're dealing with a system that really brainwashed a lot of people, they really don't know how to start from scratch, because a lot of the stuff they were willing to believe were basically came out to be not true. So... I just kind of find it crazy how we live in an information age and people are just more clueless than ever.
Man, even my song Witches, I get it, Christianity. I grew up in Russia, which is Orthodox Christian, whatever.
Uh-huh.
But, so, not only Jesus was black, whatever, right? But it's the original story comes from, like, Horus and Isis and Osiris. Anyways, but he was a sorcerer and he was healing people. So I don't understand how spiritual work and healing now is a sin and now is the devil work. But what Jesus was doing, you know, and even he had oppression and people were trying, you know, to get him. So it's like, where did that like message get lost? So, you know, it's like, it's interesting because I think the point of his message was that we're all daughters and sons of God. You know, we all have that power within us because he was fighting for people. You know, the temples were making money, and he was like, listen, we're all our gods. You know what I mean? Like, we're all our daughters and sons of God. That power is within you. But somehow the power is shifted everywhere else outside of ourselves. So, you know, every song that I put out, it has a certain message. And not to go against anything, but just like, listen, the power is within you, you know, check with yourself. Stop believing what other people tell you. Even with my clients, when I work with my clients in hypnotherapy, I say, take what resonates, leave the rest. Because my job is not to enforce my power over you. Like, my job is to help you get to your own power. so that you can make decisions consciously and follow through with them, as opposed to unconsciously live your life. You know what I mean? So for the most part, I dehypnotize people, not hypnotize people, because people are already hypnotized. They already have their belief system from environment, from media. So I want people to start thinking for themselves and have their own belief system. That's the true power of, you know, freedom of religion and freedom of choice and freedom of speech, when you can choose for yourself. What do you believe in, you know?
Exactly.
Definitely. You know, one thing about it, Rod, is it's always important to definitely, because this is where a lot of times some people run away with things, because things have happened in the world, you know, and how you grow up, what you see, how experiences mold and shape you, basically dictate your thought process. One thing I've always said with people is have an open mind, but be rational in your judgments and your assessments. You know, and that's where I think a lot of times those lines get blurred with some, because they begin to think, because what you're advocating is actual facts. You know, we just get concerned about those people that run down the road with no knowledge of anything and then proclaim themselves to be some type of intellectual savant, and we're looking at them like, this motherfucker couldn't read past fifth grade. How the fuck is he going to tell us about all this other stuff?
He got a voice.
I know, right?
He got 30,000 subscribers.
Yeah,
and that's where, you see, the fear comes in for those people that are supposed to do what they're supposed to do. And because of all these extreme ways of, you know, controlling people, a lot of people lost their voice, or they're afraid to speak up about what's important. But it's our job. We have the power. It's our job to speak up about certain things, you know what I mean? So that those that are not really conscious can become conscious. Because if we don't take our power back, then the power is always going to be in that extreme areas of our lives. Because we do have the power. We do.
Right.
Freedom, the free will. God gave us free will. We can consciously co-create our reality. So if we give our power away to these people, these beings, whatever, then we do it by choice, you know? So that's where I'm talking about, like, artists that are really true about something, people that are really doing something, like, people need to chill with that, because we are messengers. We are here to speak up about things that people don't speak about or too afraid. Like when I started to speak up about domestic violence before this whole Me Too movement started, I did a conference on hypnosis and overcoming sexual abuse. You know how much hate that I got from that? Like even in my own community, like in my college of hypnotherapy, like this director's wife said, oh, you don't talk about people like that. I said, people like who? Like me? You know? It happens to everyone. Like sexual abuse, men, women, children, you know, people don't talk about it, but it happens a lot in life, and we need to start speaking up about it. You know what I mean? And I worked with a lot of people and a lot of soldiers with PTSD and, you know, a lot of men too that were molested or somehow abused. So it's not just women or man thing. It's the world thing, you know? So when I put out a press release, when I was working on my documentary, you know, people started, like, talking shit about, like, oh, you're going to turn women against men. I said, well, just because I talk about domestic violence doesn't mean that I stand against men or women. Like, I'm just bringing up the issue to the surface. I exposed the issue, and we're going to talk about it. People don't want to talk about it, you know?
Yeah. And,
I think a problem, too, people love to – I think a main problem that a lot of people have in particular, and I noticed this with a lot of discussions, is nobody likes to talk about not only what they're doing or the elephant in the room, but the elephant in the room as well, because it's easy to deflect.
It's easy to deflect.
On things and, you know, shift the conversation left, and that's where you have issues that's never been solved. Like both genders play a role in the division that's going on with this world. It's just that we're never going to really have that real discussion, except on Off the Cuff Radio, that is. I just want to plug that.
Yeah. You know, one thing about it, and you also got to think about this too. When you're dealing with something that is pertinent, as a man, I am never for a man putting hands on a woman, just like I would never tell a woman to put hands on a man, because it's a respect and it's just about you don't invite certain things. It's a deeper issue with that, because when you look at how a lot of times domestic violence comes, it's about anytime, and especially in relationships, it's about control. That's basically what the definition is in terms of how it happens. But it also has to go back where it's rooted further in terms of dysfunction, in terms of how people grow up and how they have used, how they've seen violence in the household to rectify situations, you know. And that's something, no matter what color you are, black or white, that culture has to be broken. That's a generational curse, because, you know, when you have these kids, you know, when I was teaching, assistant PE, I saw how these kids, how these babies, they internalize this, you know. A lot of times the battle was in school just to keep them, you know, behaving, but then I also had to understand too that some of these kids got a lot of shit they deal with at home that they bring to school.
At home. Yeah. And these things are generational. So,
yeah.
And then people talk about racism and domestic violence, everything that, like, main issues and bullying, you know, kids are bullying each other. Like, it starts there at very young age, you know, that bullying part. It's like, it's insecurities, it's trying to gain power and control. And it's like, it's a lot of it coming from, like, what's happening at home, you know. So all of these issues we talk about on the surface, like, okay, racism, or we go back to the history, but we don't talk about the roots of the issue and generational traumas that they need to be healed. So going even deeper than that, you know what I mean? Like, it is, and as an advocate for domestic violence, you know, I don't stand, like, for the gender. It happens everywhere. It's just, okay, it's time to look at issues from a higher perspective. It's time to really look deeper where it's coming from and how it came from. When, you know, and studying, you know, ancestral traumas and my own traumas, working through all of that stuff, doing ancestral work, it's so engraved in us, you know. So until that happens, that those generational traumas are healed, all of the other issues are only working on the surface. You can treat anxiety, but it's like some of the things were, like, the studies show, like, you know, it passes on, that PTSD is being passed on to children, and, like, skip one generation. So from a grandmother to, like, a grandchild, and the grandchild can be born with PTSD without even having any traumatic experiences. So, but the good news is we can change DNA and we can heal those traumas with the power of our thoughts. Like, that's why hypnotherapy is so powerful. You can literally, and science already proved that, you can change your DNA with your thoughts, right? So generational diseases, generational traumas, we can change that. But nobody talks about solutions. We're just caught up in the victim mentality. And that's, the victim mentality is the trauma itself that is not going to be healed, whether you've been in an abusive situation or been the victim of racism. You know, all of these things, they're traumatic. So nobody talks about healing and solutions. We just talk about all the other stuff, you know. We just escalate this energy we don't do anything about it. So it's very important to look at problems at a high perspective, not from, like, me, you, oh, you know, I'm a victim, or oh, he's an asshole, you know what I mean? Like, and just really look deep and see, like, okay, where did it start, you know, and start working deeper on that, and myself included. So when I was going through these situations, I had to look at myself and start healing myself, because you can't control other people. So I started healing my own lineage and seeing, okay, where my generational curses come in? Why is this manifested in my life? So you start with yourself, and then you're able to lead others. But, you know, everybody has to do their own work. Nobody's going to come and rescue you, especially people that don't give a fuck about you. Like, people waiting for the government to wake up or for other people to wake up and save them, it's not going to happen. It's your job to break those generational curses. That's why you're here, for your grandmothers and your grandfathers. When you stay in your purpose and you do something great with your life, that's how you do it. You know, you stop it. you decide and you're like, okay, no more. No more alcoholism. No more drug abuse. No more of that. I'm going to heal myself and I'm going to heal everyone who comes after me. Anyways,
yeah,
so I can keep talking.
No, because we want our guests to talk. This is beautiful because we love our guests to talk, and we love it even more when our guests have meaningful things to say, because we were just processing all of it. One thing about it is when I've dealt with a couple of women in my life, my first love, and she had a lot of unresolved issues, I think that kind of affected our relationship at a certain level to why it didn't work, because she had a very traumatic childhood growing up. Another chick I was dealing with, she had her stuff where it was a lot of transiency in terms of moving around and never really, kind of being settled and then kind of being exposed to some things at a young age that maybe she should have not seen that, skewered her views on things. And it's like, when you're dealing with somebody trying to bring you out of it, it's hard, because if you've grown up in a certain environment where you've seen violence, or maybe you were exposed to, sexual things, not necessarily being molested, but just seeing certain things without having the understanding of it, or just whatever, as a child, you can't process it because you are a child. This is the biggest problem we have at times in our society, no matter who the kids are. I can only speak for black people because I am black and this is what I've seen, but I'm not speaking for all black people, but situations I've seen, when you put a lot of these kids in these situations in the hood to where they're exposed to certain things, it's like you're making these children grow up faster than what they need to. And especially if the home environment is not stable, these children grow up with a very distorted and even twisted view of the world. And by the time they get older.
And they live with PTSD, and they don't have coping skills to learn. So they just push everything to the side and, just playing the gangster part. But your emotions are valid, and how you feel is important, because if you suppress it all the way down, then deep, healing cannot happen. You have to feel it out to allow it to release, And when we're children, we don't have those coping skills. We don't know how to process. So we kind of put it in the back mind. And then it comes out in relationships later on in life, it's a big issue, issue. And as a society, we have to change it ourselves. We can't wait for anybody else to do it for us,
Yeah,
most people are just so focused on the drama part and the beefing and the entertainment that nobody wants to do what they're supposed to do. It's easier that way. That's our coping mechanism.
That's what you said about how with people that they've never been allowed to articulate their feelings, it manifests itself in violent ways because they hold that in. I mean, when I see grown men at times, in the club, they be riffing, about how they can't wear their hat in a club, and they're about to throw a whole bitch fit. And I'm like, I'm looking at them like, dude, it's not that.
People just start fights. Yeah,
they really like being their feelings like that, and then they all pouting.
They just
want
to find an excuse. They just want to find some reason to just wild it out. I'm like, man, they just take it out on them to release their emotion.
Mm.
Yeah, don't take it out on innocent people because you can't pay child support, buddy. Step your game up.
Yeah, or you're taking out of the family on your loved ones. That's what domestic violence is. And that's economic too. Like everything starts with economy. If you don't, you have to survive, and just the image of what being a man is and all of that, it puts a lot of pressure on the masculine, And so with all of that, people take out their emotions, with their loved ones, So it's not just the emotions itself. It's like it's deeper than that,
And you know what? And you start to see it more since last year, since the whole pandemic started. Like you started seeing more increase of domestic violence. Start seeing more people divorcing. Start seeing more breakups. And it just shows that a lot of these couples, they don't know how to stand the test in the midst of all these tests. But that's the real test right there. Like, are you staying with your mate during a pandemic, or are you going to stand with your mate during a hardship? A lot of these couples, they love the white bread, but don't like the end pieces.
Right.
Yeah.
There's so much going on in this world right now.
Yeah. I mean, so in terms of your hypnotherapy, Rob, pretty much how do you pretty much start off with your patients in terms of really, like, getting them relaxed and then getting them in terms of, like, you know, because getting into that subconscious to really open up their minds? What's the process before you actually start the real treatment?
Well, talking about hypnotherapy, I do have a client coming in, like, in a second, so... But I would love to come back and speak to you more about that if you guys are open to it. I feel like we had such a great conversation.
To make it short, the banquet, everything. Yes, you are welcome back anytime.
But to make it short, I usually people call me for different things and they make an appointment. And in the first session, I explain how everything works, how subconscious mind works. I teach them what hypnosis is. You know, it's a natural state, that it's not something that I create. It's just something that I help people to get access to their subconscious mind and not be so hypnotized by environment, so to get their power back. So whatever that is, whether, you know, the symptoms can be different for everybody. A lot of times people come in like quit smoking or confidence, and then the root issue is they did have traumas. You know, we're not necessarily talk about traumas from the get-go unless you're open to it, but you know, a lot of times we're healing different parts of the psyche, you know, layer by layer. So, you know, and then I have the spiritual side as well, where I help people, you know, go through those ancestral curses and kind of like heal that part and help people on a spiritual level.
Definitely. Well, definitely. Yeah. We don't want to hold the opportunity of crying and everything. But
we
have enjoyed this. We have.
I'll be talking to you forever.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate you.
Yeah, big shout out to Angela for making this happen. I mean, one of the best
players
in the game.
Sorry, guys. My client
you're
is
good,
here,
you're
but
good,
thank
you're
you
good.
So
you're
much.
Saying,
I'm going to have to say goodbye. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Let's do it again. Welcome back anytime.
Okay.
We'll be seeing you on IG. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll definitely keep in touch. That's right, y'all. That's episode 416. We had great dialogue tonight. And we got more coming for this week. Y'all stay tuned at the same time, same channel. We coming with more heat, man.
Yeah. Another one in the books. And we out. Peace.